51. Fire and Hay. Nadia cried and cried, gripping the blanket between her teeth to try and stop herself. Her head was damp under the pillow. She would have liked to go out, to get away from that room till late night. But in the huge city of Moscow, she had nowhere to go. It wasn't the first time her roommates had used such wounding words, calling her old hag, misery guts, the nun. What hurt most was the unfairness of it. She used to be so cheerful. But 5 years of lying leaves its mark. 5 years of continually wearing a mask that cramps and pinches your face, hardens your voice, and numbs your thought. Maybe she really was by now an insufferable old maid. It was so difficult to see yourself clearly. It was only in a dormitory where you couldn't stamp your foot at mother as you did at home. Only there among your peers that you learned to recognize what was bad in yourself. Apart from Gleb, no one at all would ever understand her. But even Gleb did not really understand. He had not told her what she ought to do, what she should be making of her life. He had said only that he would not be released. Her husband's swift and sure blows had shattered all the hopes that fortified her from day to day, bolstered her faith, gave her the strength to wait and preserve her independence. He would never be released. That meant that he had no need of her, that she was ruining her life for nothing. Nadia was lying face downward, staring fixedly through the gap between pillow and blanket at the patch of wall before her, and she could not, did not try to understand where all the light was coming from. She had thought that it was very dark, but suddenly she could make out the pimples in the crude whitewash on the familiar wall. Then, suddenly, Nadia heard, through her pillow, fingers beating a rhythm she recognized on the plywood panel of the door. When Dasha said, "Shchakov's here. Are you getting up?" Nadia had already whipped the pillow from her head, jumped off the bed in her stockings, straightened her rumpled skirt, and tidied her hair while her feet felt for her shoes. Musa, watching her in the wan half-light, was taken aback by her eagerness. Dasha darted over to Luda's bed and quickly tucked in the bedclothes. The visitor was then admitted. Shchakov had draped an old army overcoat over his shoulders. He had not lost his soldierly bearing. He could bend, but he could not stoop. His movements were precise. "Greetings, good people. I've come to see what you're up to with the light out so that I can try it myself. I'm bored stiff." What a relief. In the yellowish gloom, he could not see that her eyes were swollen and tearful. Dasha answered him in the same tone. "So, if the lights hadn't dimmed, you wouldn't have come?" "Certainly not. Women's faces lose their charm when brightly lit. You see the spiteful looks, the envious glances. You should have been there a little while ago. The wrinkles, the overdone makeup. If I were a woman, I'd get a law passed that lights should never be on full. That way they'd all be married in no time." Dasha looked at him sternly. He always talked like that, and she didn't like his well-rehearsed facetiousness. "May I sit down?"
"Please do," Nadia said, coolly hospitable.
There was no trace of her recent tiredness, her anguish, her tears in her voice. Unlike Dasha, she liked his self-assurance, his air of superiority, his low, steady voice. His presence was soothing. She even liked his jokes. "I'd better sit down quickly. I may never get another invitation from these people. So then, what are you studious young ladies doing?" Nadia was silent. She couldn't say much to him because they had quarreled the day before yesterday, and she had unthinkingly poked him in the back with her briefcase, which suggested a greater degree of intimacy than actually existed between them, then run away. It was stupid, childish, and she was glad that they were not alone now. Dasha answered,
"We were just going to the movies. We don't know who with."
"What's the picture?"
"The Indian Tomb."
"Aha! Not to be missed. As a hospital nurse once said to me, there's lots of shooting, a lot of killing, and it's a simply marvellous picture." Shchakov had made himself comfortable at the common table. "But if you don't mind my saying so, good people, I expected to find singing and dancing here, and it's more like a funeral. Bumpy patch with parents? Latest ruling of party committee bothering you? I don't think it applies to graduate students."
"What ruling?"
Nadia asked in a subdued voice. What ruling? That the social forces must check up on the social origins of students and make sure that they have indicated their parentage correctly. There's a wealth of possibilities here. Somebody may have confided in somebody or blurted out something in his or her sleep, or read somebody else's letter, things of that sort. More prodding and prying. How sick of it she was. How she longed to get away from it all. What about you, Musa Georgievna? Have you been hiding something? Despicable, Musa exclaimed. You mean even that doesn't cheer you up? Maybe you'd like to hear a very funny story about a secret ballot at yesterday's meeting of the Mechanics and Mathematics Board. Shchakov was addressing them all, but his eyes were on Nadia. He had been wondering for some time what she wanted from him. Her interest was more obvious every time they met. If he was playing chess with someone, she would hover over the board and ask him to give her a game and teach her the openings. It was just that chess is a marvellous way of killing time. Or she would invite him to hear her perform at a concert. Perfectly natural. You want to hear your playing praised by some not entirely indifferent listener. Then there was the day when she had a spare ticket for the cinema and invited him. She wanted to indulge in a fantasy, just for one evening, to be seen with an escort, have someone to take her arm. Then she had given him a little notebook for his birthday, but did it rather awkwardly, slipped it into his jacket pocket, and almost ran away. What an odd way to behave. Why run away? She was shy, that was all. He had caught up with her in the hallway and started wrestling with her, pretending that he was trying to return her present, and had even put his arms around her. She had been in no hurry to free herself, but had let him hold her for a moment. It was so many years since she had experienced it that her arms and legs were paralyzed. And just now that playful tap with the briefcase? In his dealings with Nadia, as with everybody, absolutely everybody, Shchakov exercised iron self-control. He knew how easy it was to get involved with a woman, and how difficult to extricate yourself. But when a lonely woman begs for help, simply begs for help, who could be so stiff-necked as to refuse? When Shchakov left his room to walk over to 318, he knew for sure that he would find Nadia at home and felt a certain excitement. His funny story about the secret ballot earned only a polite laugh or two. Are we or are we not going to get any light? Even Musa had lost patience. However, I note that you don't find my stories the least bit amusing, especially Nadezhda Ilyinichna. From what little I can see of her, she looks as black as a thundercloud, and I know why. She was fined 10 rubles the day before yesterday, and she misses them unbearably. Nadia's immediate reaction to his jest was to seize her handbag, wrench it open, snatch the first thing she found, tear it up hysterically, and fling the pieces onto the common table in front of Shchakov.
Musa, I won't ask you again,
Dasha wailed, grabbing her coat.
Are you coming or aren't you?
All right, Musa mumbled, and made for the coat hooks, limping slightly.
Shchakov and Nadia did not look around to see them go. But when the door closed behind them, Nadia felt a little frightened. Shchakov picked up the scraps of paper and looked at them closely. They were the crackling remnants of another 10-ruble note. He rose, letting his overcoat fall onto the chair, and walked unhurriedly round the table to face Nadia, towering over her. He clasped her small hands in his large ones. Nadia. It was the first time he had called her by her given name alone. She stood stock still, feeling helpless. The spurt of anger that had made her tear up the note was over as suddenly as it had begun. A strange thought flashed through her mind. There was no guard beside them bending his bovine head to listen. They could talk about anything they liked, and decide for themselves when to part. She was close enough to his strong, regular features to see that the left and right sides of his face were identical. She found the regularity of his features attractive. He unclasped his hands and ran them along the sleeves of her silk blouse.
Nadia, he said coaxingly. Let me go, she answered, but weakly, reluctantly. What am I to think? He said,
sliding his hands from her elbows to her shoulders.
"Think about what?"
she asked faintly. But she made no attempt to free herself. He gripped her by her shoulders and drew her toward him. The flame in her cheek could not be seen in the dim, yellowish light. She put her hands on his chest and pushed him away.
"Whatever makes you think that I'm damned if I know what I'm supposed to think?"
He released her and walked past her to the window. Water gurgled in the radiator. Nadia straightened her hair with trembling hands. Shchakov's hands trembled too as he lit a cigarette.
"You know, don't you?"
he asked, pausing between words.
"How dry hay burns?"
"Yes. The flame shoots up to the sky, and then there's just a heap of ash."
"Right up to the sky," he said.
"And then a heap of ash," she repeated.
"So why do you keep throwing fire onto dry hay?" Had she really been doing that? Could he really not understand? See that she wanted to feel attractive once in a while? Feel just for a minute that someone liked her better than other women, that she was still the best?
"Let's go out somewhere, anywhere," she pleaded.
"We aren't going anywhere. We are staying here."
He was smoking in his usual calm fashion, gripping the holder between his strong lips, a little to one side. Nadia liked this habit of his, too.
"No, please, let's go out somewhere."
"It's here or nowhere," he said peremptorily. "And I must warn you, I'm engaged."